Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Jody Millman, author of the new and dramatic novel Hooker Avenue from the Queen City Crime Series. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom and happy Mother's Day, everybody. I know it's a Hallmark holiday par excellence, the leading cause of card sales in America, maybe after Valentine's Day, but it's also a day dedicated to celebrating the simple biological fact without which none of us would exist. Maternity. And while it's a darn strange way to reproduce, when you think about it, messy, dangerous, downright unsanitary, it sure is essential for fulfilling the first commandment in the Torah, Pru Revu, be fruitful and multiply. By golly, I'm awfully grateful that my own mom, may she rest in peace, decided to do it. And I suspect you are too, at least about your own mom. Mother's Day is a great excuse to trot out all those stale, tired Jewish mother jokes. You know, how many Jewish mothers does it take to screw in a light bulb? Never mind, I'll sit in the dark. While we are usually not above doing exactly that, trotting out those jokes on a regular basis, this time I think we can rise above the temptation, at least going forward, and concentrate on the lovely and wonderful quality of motherhood that is essentially Jewish. And so to play us in on this Mother's Day morning, here's the French Yiddish Gypsy world music group Les Unois playing their jazzy rock version of My Yiddish Mama, My Jewish Mother.
A Yiddish Mama Es gibt nicht besser in die Welt A Yiddish Mama Oy vei wie bitter, wenn sie fällt. Wie schön und richtig is in uns, wenn die Mama es du. Wie treurig findest du, wenn Gott nimmt die Reue voll im Abu. Du wasser, Und fahren und sie gelaufen, fahr ich Kind. Nicht halten ihre Teile, das ist gewiss die größte Sinn. Weil wie glücklich und reich ist der Mensch, was hat. Als eine schöne Matune, Geschenk von Gott. Nur ein altischke jüdische Mame, Mame, Mame. Und Feier Wollen sie gelaufen Fahr ich Kind Nicht halten nirtagen. Das ist gewiss die größte Zeit. Weil wie glücklich und reich ist der Mensch, was so als eine schöne Natur geschenkt von Gott. Nuch an altischke jüdische Mame.
A Jewish mother is the best in the world. That song runs, through fire and water she'll help her own child. She is truly a gift from God. And on Mother's Day, we recognize and celebrate that fact, no matter how many Jewish mothers it takes to screw in a light bulb. You know, we've always had to cancel religious school on Mother's Day. Whenever we've tried to hold it in any synagogue I've served, we have received vigorous protests from the mothers in the congregations. I wondered at that. It seems to me that the best thing we could do for moms on Mother's Day would be to take their tykes off of their hands for a few hours and give them a little mini break on a Sunday morning. But most mothers, it seems, would rather have their kids make them a messy and sometimes gruesome breakfast in bed, rather than have the luxury of a quiet and private morning. I guess moms actually like their own progeny, most of the time at least. And now a very serious subject indeed. This presents a bit of an awkward transition here on Too Jewish, but it has been a week of complicated news in America, and we must address it. The leak of the coming U.S. Supreme Court ruling reversing Roe v. Wade and likely changing national policy on abortion is not unexpected, but it is clearly both divisive and politically and socially explosive. I have been asked the Jewish position on abortion this week, not for the first time, and I'm sure not for the last time. Since the Jewish view is extraordinarily different from the religious Christian view, and since it is also atypically a pretty solid consensus view in Jewish traditional texts, I think I can explain it fairly concisely. First, the original commandment, the primary mitzvah that I talked about earlier, given to all life, is pru revu, be fruitful and multiply. That includes the commandment given to Adam and Eve in Genesis. For Jews, life begins not at conception, as it does for many Christian traditions, but at birth. In the Torah, this is expressed in a statement that a person who causes a woman to miscarry a fetus is not subject to prosecution as a murderer, but instead for having caused trauma to the woman, and must pay a fine. The starkest delineation of this distinction between a fetus and a baby, who is considered fully human, of course, comes in the Talmud, the great Jewish text of law and lore. Whenever a woman's life is threatened by the fetus she is carrying, according to the Talmud, the woman's life must always be preferred to that of the potential baby. That is, a living human being must be protected over a fetus. The Talmud goes so far as to say that the fetus is considered to be no more than water within the body of the woman. The fetus has no right to life, quote-unquote, if it threatens the health of the mother. And many authorities in Jewish religious law extend that to the mental health of the mother, including many Orthodox authorities. According to the Talmud, and subsequent Jewish law based on the Talmud, only when the fetus head crowns, that is, comes out of the mother, does it become a full human being with a, quote-unquote, right to life. Prior to that, if it threatens the life and even the health of the mother, it is considered a rodef, that is, a potential murderer who can be excised to save the mother. This is in direct opposition to the Catholic, Orthodox Christianity, and evangelical preference for the life of the unborn fetus, who has not yet committed any sins, to the life of the mother who has already sinned, since all, you know, living, breathing, walking around human beings sin. There is no belief in this concept in Judaism. That makes the halachic, the Jewish legal understanding of abortion, not particularly controversial. If there is a need for an abortion, it should be conducted in the safest medical way possible, protecting the life and health of the mother. That does not mean that Judaism advocates for abortion as a casual choice, of course. There are many other means of birth control that are preferred and should be made available, as should education about the human body and sexuality and reproductive processes, for adolescents in particular. But Jewish law accepts abortion as a procedure, not only in cases of abuse, such as rape or incest, in which it is certainly appropriate. It is also considered acceptable, according to Jewish law, to protect the health of the mother, again, including her mental health. Obviously, abortion is not a procedure entered into casually or without deep emotional strain on the woman. All of which makes the controversy in America over abortion not so controversial for Jews. It is clear that, for us and from a Jewish religious viewpoint, abortion should be legal, available, and medically safe, if certainly not the first approach to birth control. There is no doubt that there will be increasing conflict in America over abortion, and it will get uglier. But the Jewish traditional position is clear, and that should be true for all Jews, from religious to secular. Abortion should be available, legal, and safe. And now, back to a lighter note. When we return in a moment this morning on Too Jewish, our guest, Jody Millman, will tell us how she comes up with her best-selling crime novels and how she ended up moving from the law to writing about gruesome murder. Find out when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning. Jody Millman has published, a lot of terrific books and won a bunch of awards for writing the Queen City Crimes series and has won a variety of awards for American fiction, in particular mystery and crime fiction. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you, Rabbi. I'm happy to be here.
So, Hooker Avenue, do you get to pick the titles of your books?
I do, and this was a title I had even before I wrote the book.
And explain if you would.
Okay. Well, I live in the city of Poughkeepsie, and one of the main streets in Poughkeepsie is called Hooker Avenue. And I was always wondering why it was named Hooker Avenue. So that's part one.
Yeah, I mean, was it Mr. Hooker? Exactly how did that come about? Sure.
It came about because there was a gentleman named James Hooker who lived in Poughkeepsie. And it turns out he was a well-known attorney, a surrogate court judge. He was on the New York State Water Commission. I mean, he was very well-known, and he was a property owner here in Poughkeepsie. So I believe that he owned property along the area where Hooker Avenue now exists. So the street was named after him, but that is only part of the story as it relates to my book.
Obviously, and I don't think I'm giving anything away when I say it has to do with the murder of a prostitute, and then it, you know, gets complicated. You were an attorney, and you went straight and became an author. Tell us about that process.
Well, I first became an author back in 2000, and it was by unfortunate happenstance. My father had written a series of Broadway guides, and it was called Seats New York, and it became extremely popular because nobody had a handbook that had all of the seating plans for theaters, how to get there, how to buy cheap tickets, everything you needed to know about going to Broadway. As soon as it was published, my father unexpectedly passed away. And the publishing company said, look, we have a bestseller on our hands. Can you come in to help us? So at that time, my husband had received a transfer from Poughkeepsie, New York to Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I closed my law office. So at that time, I figured, okay, I think I can do this. I think I can write a nonfiction book. So I went on to write three nonfiction books. I did two New York guides to seats, one for Chicago. And then we moved back to Poughkeepsie after about 7 or 8 years. I said, you know what? It's time for me to write fiction. I've got nonfiction under my belt. I think I know how to write a book. I think I'm going to go ahead and do it.
And so that brought you into this kind of nexus of some of your legal background and the fiction that you write. We'll talk much more with Jody Millman when we come back here on Too Jewish. The book is called Hooker Avenue, a Queen City crimes novel. We'll be back in just a moment. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a wonderful array of services, classes, and events this spring and summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the Catalina foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for in-person Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests in person and online. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Beit Simcha is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night and Saturday morning, or join us Friday night on our Facebook page. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Torah study precedes those Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Our Facebook page is BeitSimcha Tucson, Beit Simcha Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, and there are many, are available live and on Zoom. Our wonderful religious school is available in blended format, too. Some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, our meditation time, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses in person and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Beit Simcha Tucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest and fastest growing Jewish congregation and community in all of Arizona in its exciting beginning years. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, Kvetch or Kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, TOOJewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 175,000 downloads on Podbean. Please post a rating and a good review of Too Jewish wherever you are listening to our podcast. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
The conflict in Ukraine since Putin's invasion has been raging now. It's the most important international issue, certainly in Europe, but really in the whole world. And most of the predictions at the beginning were that Russia was going to steamroll Ukraine and blitzkrieg, take Kiev, kill Zelensky, or send them off, put in a puppet, all of that stuff. None of that stuff's happened, not the way people expected it to. If you weigh the numbers, that's what should have happened. That's not what happened. Not so far, thank God. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Right. Well, we're more than 2 months into this war, and we keep discovering new horrors and new kinds of war crimes committed by the Russian side. So I don't think any measures that the world takes against Russia can possibly be deemed as too harsh. That's just my opinion. But to your point about why did this not go as predicted, I think there are all kinds of metrics that you can count objectively. You can count the numbers of tanks, the numbers of aircraft, the numbers of ships, the numbers of troops. And in all those things that you can count objectively, the Russians had a huge advantage. But A key factor in any battle, and this is cited by every great general from the ancient Romans and Lao Tzu in China through Napoleon and Moshe Dayan even, a key factor that's not measurable, not quantifiable, is the morale of troops, the sense of purpose, of why they're fighting, how motivated are they. Israel in 1967 achieved a truly miraculous victory over an overwhelming group of Arab nations that were collectively attacking it, because they were fighting for their survival. They were the most motivated soldiers the world has ever seen.
And make case that that was true in 1948 before then, and just extraordinary victory, not predicted by any of the military observers.
Right, and certainly not predictable based on quantifiable metrics.
Planes, tanks,
right.
Guns, artillery, all right. The things that people measure.
And this has been true in battles throughout history. So now I think what we've seen from the very beginning of this war, from February 24th, is that the Russian troops thought they were going on an exercise. They were ill-prepared. They weren't motivated at all. Their skin wasn't in the game, in a sense, except that their lives were being put on the line. But they didn't necessarily appreciate that. They weren't necessarily motivated to win. They were motivated to survive. And you fight differently if your interest is survival as opposed to victory. Yeah. And I think that it is this factor that accounts for the remarkable success of Ukraine. And now, in light of that success, Western countries are more optimistic about the possibility that ultimately Ukraine could win and thus ensure that Russia never again engages in such a misadventure. And therefore, we're finally giving them the kinds of arms and ammunition and military supplies that they've been asking for from the beginning.
One hopes that that's how it turns out, because this horrifying, unprovoked war, brutality and propaganda, it's straight out of the fascist playbook. And there's no justification conceivably for what Russia has done. And Ukraine's courage in fighting this, it demonstrates sometimes that human factors need to be considered.
Right. Plus, I mean, this is a humanitarian catastrophe on a level not seen since World War II. And I think it's also it's had many unintended consequences, including actively changing the security architecture of Europe, which will be interesting to watch and see how that unfolds. But it's certainly not unfolding in the direction that Putin expected it to unfold.
Tom, thanks so much. We hope for better things and continued better news, and we will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
In honor of Mother's Day, today we offer our top 10 ways you can know that you have a Jewish mother. Number 10, someone's always giving you too much to eat. Number 9, the light bulbs never get changed until you ask to do it. Number 8, somehow you always feel guilty. Number 7, you tell other people to put on a sweater because you are cold. Number 6, you're sure your kids are smarter than everybody else's. Number 5, you tell everyone else, but not your kids. Number 4, you didn't know a meal could have only one kind of meat until you went to college. Number 3, you actually like gefilte fish. Number 2, you're pretty sure everybody you know is secretly having plastic surgery to look thinner. And the number 1 way you know that you have a Jewish mother, you really need to ask if you should call. Those are the top 10 ways to know that you have a Jewish mother in honor of Mother's Day today. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Moses goes up Mount Sinai to get the Torah, and God says to him, Moses, this next law is weird but important. Do not boil a calf in its mother's milk. Moses says, okay, so we shouldn't eat milk products and meat at the same time. God repeats, do not boil a calf in its mother's milk. And Moses says, okay, so if I eat meat, I have to wait 6 hours before I eat dairy? God says a third time, Moses, I said, do not boil a calf in its mother's milk. And Moses says, so that means I have to have different dishes for meat and dairy, wash them separately, have two different sinks, make sure I look at ingredients on anything that even looks like it might be one or the other. And God goes, fine, Moses, have it your way. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and be careful about the meat and the dairy. And now a word of Torah. Emorah, portion this week in Leviticus, begins as so many others do. God gives commands to the people of Israel, but this time the language is different. Usually commandments begin with a Hebrew word daber, speak to the children of Israel, or occasionally tzav, command the children of Israel. This time a much softer word, emor, say to the priests, the children of Aaron, is used. Why? There's a clue in the continuation of the first sentence of our portion. Seder actually begins, say to the priests, and then adds, and say to them. Commentators do not believe the Torah is ever truly redundant. The Talmud teaches that there is a subtle message here. Be cautious in how we as adults speak to children. Emor means to speak softly and kindly. Good advice in instructing children at any time. But why specifically is this word emorah used twice in regard to the priestly commands? Priests, after all, are adults, not children. Perhaps the essence lies in the central message of holiness given to our ancestors, articulated forcefully at the start of last week's portion of Kedoshim. You all shall be holy, for I, God, am holy. Here in emorahs, the specifics of the designated representatives of the people in holiness are articulated. The change to softer language is notable. The priests are the ones who actually have to help the people achieve holiness. They must be given the careful, scrupulous requirements, but also inspired to do that work with devotion and passion. There will be a balance to maintain between conscientious, obsessive attention to detail and finding a way to communicate the sacredness of their calling to the Jewish people, who are not as occupied with its processes and may not be as emotionally invested in it as they are. Thus, the word used here is emor, speak, explain, teach, inspire, not simply daber, tell, command, order, require. In leading anyone towards holiness, there has to be a serious, conscientious devotion to quality, of course. Badly performed rituals inspire no one, but there must also be a demonstrated process of caring about the way those processes are experienced by the devotees, even, perhaps especially, a love for both process and result. This week of Emor, may we be inspired to seriously and caringly seek holiness in our lives through Jewish practice, and seek to inspire others to do so as well. When we return on to Jewish, our guest this morning, Jody Millman, will explain how an actual murder, well, several murders, inspired her new book, Hooker Avenue, and how writing crime fiction comes, in a way, out of her own Orthodox Jewish upbringing. Find out all about it when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israel lashed out at Russia over unforgivable comments by its foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, about Nazism and anti-Semitism, including claims he made that Adolf Hitler was Jewish. Israel, which summoned the Russian ambassador in response, said the remarks blamed Jews for their own murder in the Holocaust. But Russia later doubled down on Lavrov's anti-Semitic comments. This marked a steep decline in the ties between the two countries when Israel has sought to stake out a cautious position between Russia and Ukraine and to remain in Russia's good stead for its own security needs in the Middle East. Asked in an interview with an Italian news channel about Russian claims that it invaded Ukraine to denazify the country, Lavrov said that Ukraine could still have Nazi elements even if some figures, including the country's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, was Jewish. So when they say, how can Nazification exist if we're Jewish? In my opinion, said Sergei Lavrov, representing Russia, Hitler also had Jewish origins, so it doesn't mean absolutely anything. For some time, we have heard from the Jewish people that the biggest anti-Semites were Jewish, he said, speaking in Russian, which was dubbed over by an Italian translation on the channel he was speaking on. In some of the harshest remarks since the start of the war in Ukraine, Israel's foreign minister Yair Lapid called Lavrov's statement unforgivable, scandalous, and a horrible historical error. The Jews did not murder themselves in the Holocaust, said Lapid, son of a famous Holocaust survivor, Tommy Lapid. The lowest level of racism against Jews is to blame Jews themselves for anti-Semitism. Later, Yair Lapid said Israel makes every effort to have good relations with Russia, but there's a limit. This limit has been crossed this time. The government of Russia needs to apologize to us and to the Jewish people. Yet Russia subsequently did just the opposite. After Lavrov's remarks, Russia's ambassador Anatoly Viktorov was summoned to the foreign ministry in Jerusalem. Israel stated its position, and the sides did not elaborate publicly. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who has been more measured in his criticism of Russia's invasion, also condemned Lavrov's comments. His words are untrue, their intentions are wrong. Using the Holocaust of the Jewish people as a political tool must cease immediately. Israel's Holocaust memorial, Yad Vashem, called the remarks absurd, delusional, dangerous, and deserving of condemnation. Sergei Lavrov is propagating the inversion of the Holocaust, turning the victims into the criminals on the basis of promoting a completely unfounded claim that Hitler was of Jewish descent. Equally serious is calling Ukrainians in general and President Volodymyr Zelensky in particular Nazis. This, among other things, is a complete distortion of history and an affront to the victims of Nazism. In Germany, government spokesman Stefan Herbstreit said Russian government's propaganda efforts weren't worthy of comment, calling them absurd. Nazism has featured prominently in Russia's propaganda about its war aims and its inventive narrative as it brutalizes Ukraine. In his bid to legitimize the war to Russian citizens, Vladimir Putin has portrayed the battle as a struggle against Nazis in Ukraine, even though the country has a democratically elected government and a Jewish president whose relatives were murdered in the Holocaust. Ukraine, of course, also condemned Lavrov's remarks. By trying to rewrite history, Moscow is simply looking for arguments to justify the mass murders of Ukrainians, Ukrainian presidential adviser Mykhailo Podolyak tweeted. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said Lavrov's remarks exposed the deeply rooted anti-Semitism of the Russian elites. The day after the controversy broke and Israel responded, Russia doubled down on Lavrov's remarks, going after the Jewish jugular. The Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs released a follow-up statement insisting Lavrov was correct about rampant anti-Semitism and Russophobia in Ukraine. For some reason, the Western press and some of our own liberals are still arguing about whether there are neo-Nazis in Ukraine, the Russian propaganda said. Well, maybe because that's not the truth. Anyway, they went on, the Jewish origin of Volodymyr Zelensky is given as one of the reinforced concrete arguments. The argument is not only untenable, but also crafty. History, unfortunately, knows tragic examples of cooperation between Jews and Nazis. It should come as no surprise that Russian anti-Semitism and vicious rewriting of history blames the Jews for the Holocaust, of course. The Russian statement also slammed Yair Lapid, who is, as I mentioned, the son of a Holocaust survivor. We paid attention to the anti-historical statements of Israeli Foreign Minister Yair Lapid, which largely explain the course of the current Israeli government to support the neo-Nazi regime in Kiev, the Russian ministry said. That is a particularly evil remark, since the current Israeli government has, well, bent over backwards and taken great pains to try to mediate between Russia and Ukraine. Prime Minister Bennett met directly with Putin for several hours just a few weeks ago. The Russian propaganda concluded, everyday and political anti-Semitism and Nazism are not suppressed in Ukraine. On the contrary, they are nurtured. Such state building is especially immoral for a country that lost 1.5 million Jews during the Holocaust and in whose capital there is a memorial to those who died in Babi Yar. The comments from the Russian ministry come while Russia's armed forces have destroyed Holocaust memorials in Ukraine during their invasion. One of their missiles even hit Babi Yar. Russians have also committed many heinous war crimes, including the killing of civilians, kidnapping, systematic rape, and torture. All of these tools of the Nazis, Putin is reviving, just as he's reviving the old Goebbels Hitler system by propagating the big lie. It is ugly. It would not be a surprise if Israel now ends up quietly supplying Ukraine with some helpful technology to use against the anti-Semitic Russians. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Jody Millman, is the author of Hooker Avenue, a Queen City Crimes novel. As we said earlier in the show, that's not where the name Hooker Avenue came from, but it does play into the story. When you're plotting these novels, how do you start?
Well, Poughkeepsie is an unusual place. We have had several bizarre crimes, and to which I've had either direct or some kind of relationship with those crimes. So for me, honestly, my first book, The Midnight Call, was based upon a history teacher of mine who subsequently became a murderer. And Hooker Avenue is based upon a serial killer who was soliciting the women and his victims literally from the front steps of my law office in Poughkeepsie. So both of those crimes, wow. When I come to plotting, I try to look at stories that are interesting, crimes that are interesting, and ones to which I have a personal connection. I think it's much more important to me to have a connection to the story.
Do you think that most, this is a kind of a broad question, but do you think that most detective and crime fiction novels follow the way the law really works?
I can't say what other people do, but I try to be true to the law. I try to be true to any kind of medical procedures that I mention. I try to be true to police procedure because I have friends who are policemen who help me. I try to be as true as possible so that when my readers walk away, I haven't given them any misinformation. It's very important for me to be accurate in my stories.
In creating the novels, you know, you start with horrific crimes, right? I mean, that's kind of what detective fiction and crime fiction in particular is all about. How do you come up with those?
Well, again, I draw on crimes, actual crimes that have happened here in Poughkeepsie. And this, in Hooker Avenue, let's talk about that one for a second.
Please.
It was inspired by the crimes of Kendall Francois. And as I mentioned, my business partner and I purchased a building in 1995. And part of the problem was that we had prostitutes who were hanging around on our front porch. We kept contacting the police, asking them please to do something about it, and they basically ignored us. However, from 1996 to 1998, the problem disappeared. The girls disappeared.
Huh.
And then on September 1st, 1998, the front page of our newspaper said Kendall Francois arrested in connection with the disappearance of 8 prostitutes. And this is where he picked them up. He literally picked them up on our front step.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was horrible.
That's a little close to home, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And the sad thing is that these women were reported missing, and the police did nothing to try to find them.
Judaism has a concept, deep dedication to justice. Tzedek Tir Dof were taught you should pursue justice. Did that influence you in sort of working into creating crime fiction?
I would say yes. I was brought up Orthodox. And my family has a long relationship with the temple and also with the justice system because my grandfather was a criminal justice attorney in Baltimore, Maryland. And again, they were very active in their temple, which was Har Sinai down in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
And my family was one of the founding members of the Orthodox temple here in Poughkeepsie, which is Shomer Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So being brought up Jewish really had a great influence on my desire for justice. And I know it keenly represents myself and also my characters in the book. Because most of my characters are Jewish.
Most of them are. Obviously, not all the victims and not all the detectives, but still. How carefully, how much does, besides the Jewish identity of the characters, how much does it influence your writing? I know some detective fiction writers who are Jewish really immerse Judaism into their works. I think that's a little less true in what you're doing.
Right. I would say that it is. But my main protagonist, Jesse Martin, is Jewish. And I think that also guides her sense of justice as she seeks justice for the victims in Hooker Avenue. And it's funny because one reader said to me that, does she have a conflict because the man she's involved with in her first relationship, Kyle Emery, wasn't Jewish? Did that create a tension in the relationship? And I would have to say yes, because he didn't really understand where she was coming from. Her second love, who's really the love of her life, is Hal Samuels, who's a district attorney. And he's Jewish, and the two of them just seem to get each other more because they have a common background.
In creating these books, how do you set up like a big storyboard? Do you just write and then work it out? How does it all come together for you as a writer?
I am a planner, and that comes from being an attorney. I outline everything. And I'm not married to the outline. The outlines kind of veer off into different directions, but I'm very clear about knowing where I'm starting and also knowing where I'm going to end. And a lot of that also has to do with the fact that I've been inspired by real crime, so I know the outcome even before I start.
So you're kind of working backwards from knowing how it's going to turn out?
Well, what I do is I take the seedling of the crime. In this case, it's the disappearance of 8 women who were sex workers.
Right. You're somewhat based in what actually happened, of course. I mean, based on the story you told us.
What I do then is I insert my cast of characters. Since it's a series, I insert them into that particular story. And I try to figure out how each character, like Jesse, the main character, Ebony Jones, the detective, and Hal Samuels, how can they give a different perspective on the crimes to create a 360-degree view of the actual crimes and criminal process.
What's the most surprising thing that you discover as you write these books?
I think that my mindset is really as an attorney first and a writer second. That's how I started out. That is becoming inverted over time as writing becomes more of my career and my occupation. And what is also surprising is that I get to explore different aspects of the world that I've never experienced before. For example, most of my practice was divorce litigation and was
so family law,
civil litigation, family
okay.
law.
Right.
I did minimal criminal work, so this allowed me to do more research into those areas of the law that I'm not particularly familiar with. And it also allowed me to learn how to use microfiche and go back in time at the library to research through their archives. The same thing going over to the record room at the county office building. I was able to go into their archives to learn more about these actual crimes.
In creating the books, do you think about, oh, this would be interesting if it was turned into a streaming series or a movie? Is that a goal?
Oh, that would be a dream. I would love it.
I'm not in the position to do so. I wish I could, but
you
know.
If anybody out there is listening, I am open to any offers, yes.
Poughkeepsie, it's funny, the settings for both mystery detectives and crime novels are sometimes a little bit surprising. Poughkeepsie seems like a very dangerous place from your book.
It's really not. it really isn't. It's a beautiful place. We're about an hour and a half north of New York City. We have Vassar College, Marist College, wonderful arts. And we have the longest pedestrian walkway in the United States, which used to be the Poughkeepsie Railroad Bridge.
Uh-huh. Isn't the Culinary Institute of America there too? Isn't
the culinary is here? Yes, yeah. It is.
I remember visiting there on a college tour with one of my kids at Vassar, which is a beautiful campus. At least in like the summer, it's a beautiful campus.
All year round, it's gorgeous. What I just try to do is show the dark underbelly.
So, you know, in walking around, do you think, wow, that'd be a great place for a murder?
Absolutely. I have a great story for you.
Okay.
I was invited to go into what's known as the Poughkeepsie Cistern. The Poughkeepsie Cistern is a 5 million gallon water tank that was built in 1926 and was used for the city's water system. We had recently transitioned to 2.5 million gallon above the ground tanks. So what a creative group has done is taken the cistern and turned it into an art installation. So you go under the ground into this, it almost feels like a Gothic cathedral where our water system used to be, and they had lights and music. And I was totally blown away. This happened like less than a week ago. And as soon as I walked in with my husband, I said, this is like the perfect setting for a murder mystery. Perfect.
Well, I hope he didn't start to look at you and think,
that's been for 40 years he's been looking at me like that.
Well, I think I'd be very careful about arguing with you about things at this point. I want to thank Jody Millman for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The book is called Hooker Avenue. Where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about the book and about the mystery series?
Well, they can go to my website, which is jodymillman.com. That's JodyMillman.com. The book is available wherever people can buy books. I urge people to support their local independent bookstore, but of course I'm on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. If they go to my website, they can sign up for my newsletter, find out some more stories about Hooker Avenue and the real Hooker Avenue. Also, my book tour is on there.
And a chance to get to meet you in person and to hear more exciting and gruesome details from the book. It's a terrific book. Jody, thank you so much. Best of luck with the book. And we really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Rabbi. Nice speaking with you.
Nice speaking with you too. Mazel tov. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Anna Salton Eisen, author of the new memoir, A Pillar of Salt. And don't forget, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person each Friday night for services and Oneg Shabbat starting at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. Shabbat services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning comes from Eleanor Risa, a past guest of Too Jewish. It's called The Mezhinka Oiskegemen, about mom giving away the youngest daughter in marriage. A nice thought on Mother's Day. My friends, have a happy Mother's Day. Give some love to your mom if she's around. Have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
The Mezhinka Oiskegemen. Motto. She-
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.